are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Thursday, March 24th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DM's always open for you. And smash the button. You get this mother clucker once it goes live. We will talk to Mark Titus, Fox Sports. Titus Tate. Mark helps break down the Sweet 16. We discuss power ratings for the remaining teams. Now, Mark, not a big gambler, but an avid basketball fan, and I think he's watched pretty much every game of this field. So a non-gambler talks to a gambler about betting lines and the tournament. And is this Mike Krzyzewski's last NCAA tournament game? Question mark. I hope it is. I am very, very locked into what I want to do in this round. I've tweeted it out on the Chicken Dinner page. Texas Tech -115, Villanova -5, and Nova to make the Final Four +250. Just understand, and I know a lot of people are wondering, well, why only two bets and one future at this point? Last opening round, you gave out 10 bets. Actually, I gave out 12. It's harder when the field shortens from 64 to 16 because it gets tougher to find bets with big edges. These lines tighten up quite a bit because all of these teams deserve to be here. And of course, most of the long shots, sans St. Peter's, are gone. And wise guys will tend to balance out these lines. I spoke to one wise guy who laid Kansas -7 when that dropped down. Another wise guy was quick to take Providence +8, and then they took some +7.5. So you have good positions on both sides of the game. I wouldn't bet that game with your money, Kansas-Providence. Now, we already discussed what I'm going to do with Kansas, roll that through to the Final Four, and then hedge accordingly. But a lot of these games are very, very tight, and I find them to be unbettable. I'm not betting Miami and Iowa State. Houston-Arizona, I can make a case literally for both teams. I lean to Houston. I like their defense. I love their guards. But Arizona is back from the dead. And that's one of the cheapest lines of the season on Arizona, -1.5 against Houston. I'm not betting Arkansas-Gonzaga. When the line came out 8.5, I'm thinking, I'm laying it. I'm laying the points. And then I came back a day later and go, ooh, I like +9. If that's the case, if you don't love the game, you don't have to play it. Believe it or not, you don't. And you don't have to wheel these games in a four-team parlay. Get that push notification. Hey, have you parlayed your NCAA tournament bets yet? There's only two plus the future. And let's go through them real quick. Texas Tech, a defensive juggernaut. Number one in the country in efficiency, according to Ken Pomeroy. They make life hell on opposing offenses because they're very good in almost every facet. Great against twos, 44%, 11th in the country, 31% against threes, and they body you up all the way out to the line, three-point line. Duke has tons of talent. We understand that. Talent, potential. This isn't 1992 or 2001 where he's got juniors and seniors. These are freshmen and sophomores. A lot of these cats are going to be in the NBA really soon. But only one upperclassman plays big minutes. And the further you go in the big dance, the more important the experience becomes. Paolo Banchero is the best player on the floor. But is he ready for this moment? I'm betting against Duke's young studs being able to drill shot after shot after shot with hands in their faces. That's what has to happen in this game. It's the upper-class defensive team against the inexperienced gunners, the offensive juggernauts. And juggernaut's probably the wrong word to use. I don't think they're a juggernaut on offense. They're streaky on offense. I am betting on defense, and experience in this round. It makes me nervous. I will admit it right now. My hand is on my heart. Coach K, final tournament, makes me fucking nervous. Because you know that Duke is probably going to get the bevy of calls from the officials. And it's probably better for ratings if Duke goes on and faces Gonzaga. But that's the only thing that has me nervous about this game. Everything else lines up for Texas Tech. And honestly, I'm ready. I'm way too ready for Coach K's career to come to a close. It's time. Let's move on. And if they lose, is K going to shake hands or is he going to just storm off? I vote for the latter. I make the latter minus 130. Villanova, Michigan. And in my bracket that you don't care about, I have Michigan in this game. I had them beating Tennessee to go to the Sweet 16, and here we are. But everything Michigan does well, Villanova does it better. We're talking about one of the most well-rounded and efficient offenses we've seen in decades. Villanova is on pace to be college basketball's best free throw shooting team of all time. 83% right now. They would be the best ever in the history of college basketball if they finish above 82.4%. And the Wildcats don't really make mistakes. Go back and look at some of their box scores. Turnovers, 7, 8, 9, 10. They limit turnovers. They make smart decisions. They make the extra pass. And they knock down open shots. When Villanova is firing, this offense is poetry. It's magical. And I don't think Michigan really does that many things well defensively. They're okay on defense, but they're not at the level of a Texas Tech. So I also look at the coaching matchup. Jay Wright, who has been a magician in this tournament last 6-7 years, goes up against Juwan Howard, who doesn't even know what he's doing when the clipboard's in his hand. Jay Wright, one of the best play designers and set callers in the country. You combine that coach with that offense and that point guard, Colin Gillespie, against Michigan, a team that is overachieved to get to this point. This is my favorite bet of the round. And I didn't send it out when it opened offshore. I think Sunday night it opened Nova -4. Very briefly, it sat at 4. Got bumped to 4.5, and now we're at 5. Total 135. Bets are pretty split. More cash on Nova. But I think Villanova is clearly the better team. You give Michigan credit. You tip your cap to them coming this far. Remember, they were only a 2-point favorite against Colorado State. They win that game. They beat Tennessee. That's great. But this is a different animal. Usually, this is the round where the favorites win, and more times than not, they roll. So I love Nova, -5. If they play a B+, A- game, they win this game by 7 or more. And late in the game, when Villanova's up 4, final minute, Michigan bricks a shot. They foul Villanova. They're going to make their free throws. That's why they're so dangerous to bet against. And this is sort of a position that helps me out with the Kansas future. It's not a full hedge, but it's something I want to add to my pocket. If you shop around, the best price in the American betting market, Villanova +250 to make the Final Four. You can find it at BetMGM. You can find it at Barstool. You can find it at FanDuel. To me, it's math. Villanova, as we just mentioned, a 5-point favorite over Michigan. That implies almost a 70% chance of probability. Odds are pretty good. Wildcats advance to face the winner of Arizona-Houston. Both of those teams are great. They both might be better than Villanova, but guess what? Only one can advance. One team will cannibalize the other. And from the power ratings we've seen, Villanova would likely be a 1-point underdog or a 1.5-point underdog against Arizona and a slight favorite against Houston. So if Nova does its job and beats Michigan, which they probably will, you are now in the regional final with a +250 ticket in your back pocket on a coin flip game. And at that point, you're in a great position. You can roll it. You can hedge it. You can do whatever you want. You can pretty much guarantee yourself that you can't lose. If you have Nova plus 250 to win in a one-point spreaded game, you could come back the other way. You could lay Arizona money line. You could take Houston money line. You really can't lose. So that's what I decided to do. Vegas Rick suggested a hedge on Villanova to win the whole thing. Now, that's predicated on you having a Kansas future to win the whole thing. 16, 18, 20 to 1. It's essentially the same bet, but I like Nova to win the region more than I like them to win the whole thing. It's easier to win one game than it is to win four. You only need to win one to not lose. Got to win four more, though, to cash that ticket. I guess if you win three, you could hedge off in the title game. But I'm keying in Villanova in that region. I think they come out of that region. They were my Final Four pick. I still have all Final Four teams alive somehow. That's one of the first times ever in this round that I haven't lost one yet, which you know now I'll lose two on Thursday night probably. But Gonzaga, Villanova, Purdue, and Kansas, all alive still. I love some of these bets that FanDuel has put out, and maybe some of the other books have as well. I haven't been looking around because I'm not betting these, but these are pretty cool. It's like the NCAA Final Exacta, National Championship, exact result. Gonzaga to beat Kansas, plus 850. Gonzaga to beat Arizona, 13-1. Gonzaga to beat Villanova, 19-1. These are nice prices. Arizona to beat Gonzaga, 19. Kansas to beat Gonzaga. That's my championship. 20-1. Wow. Should have bet that before the tournament. Kansas to beat Purdue, 20-1. Gonzaga to beat Houston, 21. Purdue to beat Kansas, 23. Arizona to beat Purdue, 24. Kansas to beat UCLA, 32. I'll just stop right there. And then the other bet, this is not the exacta. This is just get the teams. This is the box, I guess, the exacta box. Get them there. Gonzaga, Kansas, plus 550. Gonzaga, Zona, 850. Purdue, Kansas, 11. Gonzaga, Nova, 13. Gonzaga, Houston, 15. Purdue, Zona, 15. UCLA, Kansas, 20. Purdue, Nova, 23. Duke and Kansas, 25. If you shop around and find the right book, you can bet on the exacta box and the exacta. That's pretty cool. And multiple books have the most outstanding player. The two Gonzaga guys, the bigs, are favored. Drew Timmy, plus 550. Chet Holmgren, 8-1 or 850. And then the guy that I would bet, because my bread is already buttered with rock chalk, Ochai Agbaji, 950 or 10-1 to win the MOP. Benedict Mathurin, 10-1. Jaden Ivey, if you like Purdue to keep rolling, you can find him at 15-1. The more candy in the candy aisle, the more likely it is that we leave with candy. But those are the picks that I have in the Sweet 16. Texas Tech, minus 115. Villanova, minus 5. And Nova to win the region, plus 250. Sent out a tweet yesterday that is still gaining traction about the Patriots. And this is, of course, after the Dolphins traded for Tyreek Hill late Wednesday morning or early Wednesday afternoon. I lose track of time down here in Florida. But the tweet was very simple, and I had sent out a text to a guy who makes numbers for a living in Las Vegas about the Patriots. I said, where do you have them rated now on your sheet, in your machine, in your algorithm? Quote, that is the 11th best team in the AFC. And I thought, wow, that's a little disrespectful. But then you look at the board in the AFC and you're like, wait a minute. Buffalo, Kansas City, LA Chargers, Denver, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Miami. That's 10 right there. Patriots, 11. And then he said Raiders are 12. We know the bottom. We know the bottom four teams. Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, New York Jets, Houston Texans. And people are like, you don't know anything. I'm like, it's literally not my opinion. Again, reading comprehension, not important on Twitter. Facts, not important. Odds, not important. I'm literally quoting somebody else who does this for a living. So I'm writing a story Thursday on Nesson.com, Nesson Betts, because I took this conversation to the next level and I spoke to Ed Sammons at the Westgate, who's one of the best bookmakers in the world. And as we know, we've discussed this on Chicken Dinner, there's a difference between an odds maker and a bookmaker. An odds maker isn't taking bets. An odds maker is making numbers. The bookmaker, though, shapes and shades the numbers to affect the way the money comes in. And New England, even though they may be the 11th power-rated team in the AFC, that could very well be true, the difference between number one and number 11 is not that large. And that's what Sammons got into. And I'd love for you to read the story. I'll share it out and tweet it later on today. But for example, let's say that Buffalo is one, which they are in most places. And let's say New England is 11. Sammons told me on a neutral field, Buffalo is only a 4-point favorite against New England. So if it's a game in Buffalo, Buffalo's minus what? 6.5, 7 against New England? I don't even think you can make that 7 because then you'd have respected players come in and take the Pats plus 7. If the game is in New England, obviously it's a lot lower than 4. So the point was, it's crowded in the AFC. There's a clear favorite with Buffalo. There's a clear number 2 with Kansas City. But 3 through 11 could all be interchangeable. Chargers and Patriots on a neutral. What's that? LA 2.5? Maybe 3, but not higher. Not 3.5. Because then the 3.5 money comes in on New England. Broncos-Patriots, that's tight. Browns-Patriots, that's tight. Ravens-Patriots, that's tight. So the point is, even though New England might technically be 11 on one guy's power ratings, it doesn't mean that they're a bad football team, and it doesn't mean that they can't have success, make the postseason, make a run. Now, are they going to win the AFC? 22-1 at the Superbook, 20-1 at PointsBet, 20-1 at MGM. I wouldn't bet that. The Patriots could be a 3, 4, 5, 6 seed. Of course they could. They always find a way. They run the ball well. They play stout defense. But when it comes to climbing the mountain in the AFC, I don't know. Are they going to get past Indianapolis, then LA, then Buffalo in the playoffs? Probably not. That's a 3-team parlay I would not put my money on. But this conference is loaded. And the quarterbacks in this conference, insane. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Matt Ryan. I'm not as high on Ryan Tannehill as most. And then you got Mac Jones and Tua, who I still think we don't know who they are at this point. Two former Alabama quarterbacks. Really tight AFC. It's going to be a war for all these teams. And these Super Bowl odds, it's getting real tight at the top here. It hasn't been this jammed at the top of the odds board to win the Super Bowl, maybe ever. And I mean that from a numerical standpoint. So Buffalo, let's just take a book like, let's go to the Superbook. They've got Tampa favored right now, 7-1. Buffalo, 8-1. LA Rams, 8-1. Chiefs and Packers and Niners, 10-1. Cowboys, 14. Browns, 18. Chargers, 18. Broncos, 20. Ravens and Colts, 25. You get the point. Usually there's a team that's like plus 550, 6-1. Kansas City the last 3 years, I think, has been plus 5, 550, 6-1. But now you've got a team at 7, a team at 8, and a team at 8. Then 3 teams at 10. It's getting tight at the top, my friends. I don't even know who I would bet. Like, I lean to Buffalo. I think Josh Allen next year is going to be a man possessed. 8-1. You haven't gotten 8-1 on the best team in a while. And the Packers without Devontae Adams, the Chiefs without Tyreek Hill. That Chiefs roster is not good compared to where it was a couple seasons ago. I saw Johnny Murray from the Westgate tweet this out yesterday. That's a lot of pressure on Patrick Mahomes this season, Murray said. Take away the quarterback, and that is the worst roster in the AFC West. Something to think about. I've been wanting to talk baseball for about three shows now, but we ran out of time. The tournament does tend to take center stage when we get into middle and late March, but I wanted to zip through a couple things that I've noticed over the last few weeks. The best record, you can bet this at multiple American books, and two teams jump off the page to me, and it's not the Dodgers, although they're the favorite. Toronto Blue Jays at 6-1, and the Chicago White Sox at 10-1. Those two pitching staffs are very, very good, and those lineups absolutely rake. Those would be two teams I would look at to have the best regular season record. Toronto 6-1, Chicago 10-1. The make-miss the playoffs market. Yankees +310 to miss. That's interesting. White Sox -300 to make. That's relatively cheap. Think McGregor against Mayweather when everybody wants to bet the dog and the favorite becomes cheaper. I think the addition of Carlos Correa to Minnesota makes Minnesota sexier, way sexier on the surface. But that rotation leaves a lot to be desired. And the Detroit Tigers, who everybody's talking about to make a push this year, they're like 40-1 to win the World Series. They are not that good. They're just being bet that way. I would make their true number 60-1, 65-1. But the way that the Tigers and the Twins are being talked about makes it cheaper on the White Sox. -350, and their divisional price is insane. You can find at Caesars right now the White Sox at -185 to make the playoffs. And you look at these win totals in the Central. Consensus right now: Chicago 91.5, Detroit 78.5, Minnesota 78.5, Cleveland 75.5, Kansas City 74.5. So Chicago has a 13-win edge over its next team in the division, and they're only -185. I think this true number to win the division should be -300 or -400. If it's -400, that implies 80%. Probably a little high, but this division is dog shit. The Twins, if they don't make a move, I've heard Sean Manaea might become available, and they might make a move because they're clearly trying to win now. If they get Sean Manaea, okay, I'm a little bit more nervous. But if they go into the season, Minnesota, with a rotation of Sonny Gray, Dylan Bundy, Bailey Ober, Joe Ryan, and Randy Dobnak, woof. They'll hit, if they stay healthy, with Buxton and Correa and Sano and Gary Sanchez. They'll hit, but can they pitch? And will that rotation be able to go deep? What you worry about with Minnesota is that the bullpen gets burned out by July, and then they just completely fade in August and September. I think the Twins are an 80-win team at best. That White Sox number, to win the division at -185, that's a very good bet. I don't love laying 185. Come on, though. Who's winning that division? Who's going to outlast the White Sox down the stretch with that lineup, that rotation, that bullpen? I don't see it. I also had to laugh when I saw the Pirates at -5,000 to miss the playoffs. That's incredible. I'm not laying -5,000. And I was sad to see the White Sox title odds go away at WinBet from 15-1. Long gone. I was trying to have some buddies make the drive to Michigan or Arizona or Colorado to get down on 15-1. That was the best price in the world on the White Sox. Well, in the USA, I guess. Best price I see now is 12-1. Points bet, Superbook, win. But I'm keying the White Sox this year. And it's not because I'm a White Sox fan. I didn't bet them last year. I didn't even bet the win total over. Last year I had Atlanta and got lucky because the GM made some moves at the deadline when Acuna went down, Soroka never came back, and Ozuna was way out of the equation. But if there was a team that I would look to key this year, it would be the Chicago White Sox. Division, -185. Pennant, 6-7-1. World Series, 12-1. That's the team that I like the most this year. And the last thing, before we get to Mark Titus, this Craig Carton guy, what a narcissist. What a jag he is. He stole almost $5 million from family, friends, connections in a ticket scheme, a glorified Ponzi scheme. And now Carton has this platform. He has this show on the weekends where he talks about how gambling is bad, even though he lost $5 million and had to, you know, go to jail and spend time. And now Carton's talking about how there will be thousands of more people that now have a gambling problem, quote, because so many more people are betting. It's going to be a problem nationwide that I don't think a lot of states are ready for. David Purdom wrote this story yesterday on ESPN Chalk. And I'm a big fan of David Purdom. I think he does outstanding work. I think he's the best gambling writer in the space. But I didn't like the subject of this story. Carton deliberately scammed his friends for $5 million. Meanwhile, on the realistic side of the spectrum, most Americans are betting 20 or 50 bucks a pop. It's not even a fair comparison. I mean, come on. Legal sports books are going to ruin lives. Well, at legal sports books, you have to be liquid to bet. You can't run a tab on credit like Craig Carton did. It's just, I don't understand why we're paying too much attention to this guy. In other words, we'll give him a second chance. I don't have to give him a second chance. A guy who steals $5 million from family and friends doesn't deserve a second chance to me. The fucking ball's on this guy. Most people, Craig Carton, are not running up multi-million dollar tabs and stealing from their loved ones. So I don't want to hear about how sports betting is going to ruin lives and become a problem across the country. I talk to a lot of gamblers. I talk to the pros who are betting thousands. I talk to some buddies who are betting hundreds. But most bet slips are 20 bucks or less. And a lot of bet slips are $5 and $10 parlays. I'm not stupid. And I'm not going to read into a guy who fleeced people for $5 million talking about how bad gambling is for the average American because you're out of touch and you don't get the benefit of the doubt in my book. Not sorry. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, you can hear him, see him, sometimes read him at Fox Sports, the host of Titus and Tate with Tate Frazier, the one and only Club Trillion, Mark Titus. You don't have to write that much for Fox, do you?
No, I do not, thankfully. My God. I've written, I think I've gotten the, I've paid my dues there. I don't know.
Yeah, you write a couple books and you just fucking mail it in though.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's what happened is I don't know. Writing sucks. Writing sucks so much. And there's not a writer on earth that enjoys writing. And anyone who tells you, if there is a writer who says they enjoy writing, do not trust that person.
My least favorite thing about writing in the gambling space is that you'll often have the big picture storylines. For example, in the NFL, our bosses will say, all right, Sam, we want to do picks for the NFL, do a couple on Monday, do a couple on Thursday, and that's your quota. But then all of a sudden, James Harden gets traded on a Wednesday, you know? And
right.
By the way, I have a full-time job at Nesson. And, you know, Lynch will call me and be like, hey, do you have any thoughts on James Harden? I'm like, well, the Bruins are about to go on the air right now. And these bookmakers, the way this works is that they want to get bookmaker reaction. And I understand right. that. It all makes sense. But the bookmakers are taking bets and moving lines. They don't have time to talk to me. So the breaking news part of the sports betting writing can be and has been a nightmare from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, I try to write articles for this was the corner I painted myself into is when I would write my target audience was people that don't read. I can't tell you how many people come up to me and are like, hey man, bought your book. And as soon as they say that, I know what's coming. They're like, hey man, I loved your book. All right. And there's not that many. So I'm not pretending like this happens all the time, but anytime it happens, I always know what's coming next, which is that I don't even really read, and I loved your book. And I'm like, that is not the compliment that you think it is, but I'm going to take it anyway.
That was like the last time I complimented you on, oh, my shirt hasn't fit me in a really long time. And you're like, well, that just makes me feel old and fat.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's all right. You take your compliments where you can get them. And but no, I'm in no hurry to write again. But the other thing is, like, writing, you can with writing articles, people can screenshot it and throw it back in your face, and it's harder to do that with podcasts. So I stick to the podcast, you know.
Everybody that watches Providence has done that to me over the last week. I tweeted out their national title odds during the Big East Championship, or the Big East Tournament, rather, and I said, this is why Providence is 100-1. And since that day, I kid you not, a message every day, multiple for the most part. And then I did get a nice little death threat after they beat Richmond. So that was outstanding. The reason I bring that up, though, is because I'm sort of in between a rock and a hard place when it comes to handicapping this game in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
I got Kansas to win the whole thing from November at 20-1. And I've talked about it all year. I think this is their time. I think they're as deep as they've been in a long, long time. But that's on one side of my equation, and the other side is that I fucking hate Providence now. So I don't think that I can accurately or unbiasedly, that's not even a word, I can't attack this game without bias. How do you handle Kansas as a 7.5-point favorite against Providence?
Kansas was not a team that I was high on all season because the best Kansas teams – always have good point guard play, good big guys that they play through. This Kansas team has neither. They have not had solid point guard play. Like, Remy Martin was the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year. He has not been anywhere close to what anyone expected him to be. And David McCormack's serviceable, but that's the problem right there, is you would describe him as serviceable. He's not a bad big man, I don't think. But when you think about, like, the best Bill Self teams, they play through their big dudes, and he's had a ton of great big dudes come through Lawrence. The difference, though, is Remy Martin, since the NCAA tournament started, like, kind of before that, but Remy Martin's been playing as well as, I don't know, any Kansas fan could expect. So, like, Kansas to me has been a kind of a different team than they've been all season. So I'm slowly talking myself into Kansas being the team I did not think they were. Because they like, Agbaji is probably the best player left in this tournament. He's incredible. He's awesome. Christian Brown is awesome. Jalen Wilson can be awesome. Kansas, but this line, like, feels way too high to me because Providence, like, is going to find a way. That's what they do. They find a way to make every game close. They've had, like, three blowouts, I know, but, like, for the most part, win or lose, like, the game is going to be close. So that does terrify me. I share your opinion that Providence is should not be a high national title favorite, and I find it hilarious that they beat two double digit seeds and the fans are taking victory laps on you.
Oh, it's been nonstop, man. And the one guy was like, "Let us catch you outside the garden one night, you fucker." I'm like, dude, it's a basketball game.
It's a basketball, yeah. But Providence is better than I think. You know, there's been a line drawn in the sand, and either you think Providence is lucky and it's a bunch of bums that, like, just luck their way to wins, or you're, like, a Providence fan. You're like, this team is unstoppable, and we won the Big East, and we're going to win the national title because we're really fucking good. There's a middle ground where it's like, these guys, they're a bunch of B-plus players, and even saying that is going to upset Providence fans, but like, Nate Watson is a really good player. He's not a great player, but he's really good. Jared Bynum's great off the bench. Like they have pieces. So Providence winning these games all season has not necessarily been confusing to me because I do think they are a good basketball team. What has been confusing for everybody is that they never lose the close games. You know, like, that's the part that's head scratching. It's like, how does this keep happening? How does a leak in the Dunkin' Donuts Center when they're down to Xavier at the perfect time with 2 minutes left happen where they have to pause the game and clean up the leak? And it's like the rain delay in the Cubs Indians World Series, you know, that it comes at the perfect, it's like an act of God. It's that kind of shit that keeps happening with Providence that makes it impossible to assess how good they are.
You also make your own luck. I think that's totally true in life and in sports. Ken Pom says Providence is the luckiest team in the country, but they've also helped make some of that luck.
Right.
To your point about some of the things that have gone their way, I know that there's some sort of telepathy when, you know, Red Auerbach used to have Bob Cousy steer the point guard to the dead spot at the Garden, and the ball would stop and they would scoop it and they'd lob it to Bill Russell and he'd just jam on somebody. But they would have lost to Iowa. I still stand by that. But Richmond played an A-plus game against Iowa and an F game against Providence. I don't think I can assess Providence fairly because they've beaten two teams that, I mean, they couldn't cut it against Gonzaga, Arizona, Kansas, Purdue, but now here they are against Kansas, and I'm in that mental pretzel. So I can move on. I just need Kansas to win because I get closer and closer to cashing my ticket.
Yeah, I think the one thing is Providence does deserve some credit for how they beat Richmond. I mean, that was a complete
dismantling.
Yeah, dominated. And so I understand where Providence fans are coming from because we just kind of hand wave any successes they have as luck. And every, you know, like they do deserve credit. Like they are a really, really good basketball team. It's just, they're not as good as Providence fans think they are. And when the bottom falls out, it's going to fall out hard. It's just trying to time it, Providence really does feel like you're trying to time the market with some stock or something. And you're trying to like figure out when the bottom is going to fall out. And no one's been right all season on when that's going to happen, but we're all like very confident it's going to happen. So who the hell knows?
Do you have a game on either Thursday or Friday where you just know that the outcome will be very decided? Team A is going to win this game by 20, or Team B is going to upset Team A. Is there one of these matchups where you look at it on paper and go, all right, this is definitely happening?
I mean, Purdue St. Peter's is obvious, right? I mean, are we dismissing that one? Like that one?
12.5, though. That's a 12.5 point spread.
God. I don't love, so the fear with St. Peter's, and I really don't want to be this guy because I will cheer for St. Peter's in my game. That's my promise to the American public. So I'm not a hater. It's the fear you have with 15 seeds when they advance this far. First of all, none of them have ever won. Oral Roberts came close last year. Credit to them for that. But the fear you have is that they have gone back to campus and all week they've had everybody telling them how great they are. Shaheen Holloway has done 10,000 interviews. And meanwhile, on the other side, Purdue is I imagine locked in, and they are not celebrating anything. Going to the Sweet, they go to the Sweet 16 all the time. That's nothing. So that scares me. And also, like, Jaden Ivey is a freak athlete that St. Peter's has not seen anything close to him. They've not seen anything close to Zach Edey. If Purdue plays like a B-plus game, they win this thing by 20. But at the same time, 12.5 is a lot. I don't know. You start introducing garbage time, who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, you start pulling the good players off the floor, anything goes.
I don't know. UCLA Carolina is interesting to me. What's the spread in that one?
Bruins minus 2.5. The total's 142.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that total's way too low, and here's why. UCLA has played two teams that fucking crawl up the floor. They played Akron, and they played St. Mary's. And I think we pay too much attention to what's happened recently. And, well, you know, UCLA hasn't really scored that much. Well, Akron wants to be the first to 40, and St. Mary's wants to be the first to 50. Now you've got Carolina, who can definitely play in transition and make big shots and play above the rim. That feels like a game that's going to be 80-73 or something like that. So if I had to bet that one, I'd probably bet on points, and I'd go over 142.
All right. That makes sense, too. That checks out. I think UCLA is more than 2.5 points better than Carolina. I think Carolina is I think they're getting – weirdly enough, I mean, they're playing UCLA as a blue blood, but I think they must be getting some sort of, like, blue blood boost. Where you look up and North Carolina's in the Sweet 16 and you're like, oh my God, is this team good enough to make a run here and win the whole damn thing? I mean, listen, like Carolina at Duke was the win of the year in college basketball for a million different reasons. They have looked good, but Carolina plays five guys and we saw what happened with Baylor, and I understand the refs are a huge part of that, but at the same time, if you're pro Carolina, you would say the whole reason that 25 point comeback happened is because of the refs. If you which they played a part, but like to me, what it was is that Carolina trusts five players and two of them were out of the game. Yeah. One of them was tossed and one fouled out. And it to me, it exposed the problem with Carolina's lack of depth. I don't think UCLA has that problem. I think they're deep. I think UCLA is comfortable playing a million different styles of basketball. And I think they're also like the experience of having the run they had last year is going to win out. And I like UCLA to win by more than 2.5 I would take UCLA to cover that one. If you made me bet spread on one of these games, I'd probably pick UCLA to cover.
I want to talk to you about some power ratings real quick, and we're not going to get too deep in the weeds because I don't want to lose you, but these are from an odds maker. And what they do is, Mark, they give you a number on every team and then just do the subtraction. So, for example, in this field, one odds maker has Gonzaga at a 91. The same odds maker has Kansas at an 88, the second highest team. So the way that works is 91 minus 88. Gonzaga against Kansas is a 3-point favorite. And I don't really have much of an argument with that. I mean, you could make it 2, you can make it 4, but it's close. Here are the other teams, though. I want to see if you agree with this range. Gonzaga, 91. Kansas, 88. Arizona, 87. So Kansas and Arizona, only a 1-point difference there. Three teams are 86. Purdue, Villanova, Texas Tech.
I don't think Texas Tech belongs in that group. I think Texas Tech is very good, but I like, is the question, I guess where you get, is this a loaded thing? Are you trying to get me to, are you asking something else here?
I guess the question is, does that hierarchy make sense? Would you rate these teams in order? Gonzaga, Kansas, Arizona, and then Purdue, Nova Tech on the same line.
I would have Arizona above Kansas. I would probably flip them. I think it's close. I think I personally believe Arizona has been the best team in college basketball all season. I think I have thought that they are better than Gonzaga. I understand why people like Gonzaga. I understand all the metrics like Gonzaga. I am pro Gonzaga, very much so. Last year I thought Gonzaga was one of the all time great college basketball teams, even though they didn't win the title. But I think Arizona this year has been a little bit better. So I would probably flip that. And then I don't think Texas Tech belongs in that top group. I would have Villanova. I think the way Villanova's playing right now, I think they are, and I'm not just saying this because they beat Ohio State. It's just there might be a little bias there, I guess, because I personally experienced a Villanova win. But this is a tournament where in a season of college basketball where guard play is questionable at best. There's just not a lot of great point guards. If you're talking about the best, you know, I mean, there wasn't a single point guard on the first team All-American team. There's the guard play is just not as high of a level as we're used to seeing in college basketball. And Villanova has a guy in Colin Gillespie. They have Justin Moore. They have the best backcourt in the country. And they not only have the best backcourt, they have a reliable backcourt. They do not turn the ball over. They make free throws. And they have the pedigree and like all of that. I think Villanova is a team that is right up there. I mean, Villanova being in the same group of Texas Tech doesn't track with me. I think Villanova in this NCAA tournament should be at the very top tier to me.
I'm glad you brought up Gillespie because I was watching the tournament when it was UConn against Nova, and they flashed up Gillespie's stats, and he had 5 points, no boards, 10 assists. And one of the guys goes, man, he ain't shit. And I said, wait a minute. He's got 10 assists. He has one turnover, and Villanova as a team turned the ball over in the game 6 times. And at the free throw line, well, they were only 7 of 8 in this game, but Titus, they don't make mistakes in a game where everybody makes mistakes. Arizona turned the ball over 20 times against Wright State. You watch Villanova, they're the best free throw shooting team, maybe if they finish strong, of all time.
Of all time.
They turn the ball over 7, 8, 9 times a game. They make the extra pass. They make the open shot, and they don't shoot themselves in the foot. That's my favorite bet in this round. I'm laying 5 with Nova.
Yeah, I think Villanova is as you said, all of those things, they don't make mistakes. And the other thing, and I've hated watching, frankly, I do not like watching Villanova this year because I don't love their style of play per se, but this is what makes them interesting as well, is that they post up like everybody. And I think the Big East teams were a little more prepared for that, but I don't know. Like having Colin Gillespie go in the post and Justin Moore go into the post, you have guys that are guarding post moves that never guard posts. Opposing teams point guards suddenly have to be prepared for Colin Gillespie up and unders and shit like that. No one's expecting, no one's prepared for all season. You haven't guarded anything quite like it. So they're not a sexy team by any stretch of the imagination. They're not going to like blow teams out, I don't necessarily think, but Villanova is as steady as they come. They're as sure of a thing as they come. If a team's going to beat Villanova, it's going to take like an insane shooting night. Because as you said, they don't make mistakes. Villanova is not going to beat themselves. You have to bring it. You have to bring your A-plus game to beat them. I really like this team.
I have like two more things I want to get to and then let you get on to your next stop on the merry-go-round. I'm so nervous because everything in my gambling brain tells me to bet Texas Tech and lay the point against Duke because of their defense. I think their coach has done a phenomenal job this year after Chris Beard leaves. And I think defensively, that's a team you want to bet on in the tournament. But I can't pull the trigger because I'm so scared of the committee and the NCAA just pushing Coach K to the Final Four in his last hurrah.
I'm with you. I think the fear is Texas Tech being physical, and it's a you start adding up these ticky-tack fouls and Duke's in the bonus in the second half with 15 minutes to play somehow. And you're wondering how we got here. But then at the same time, you're like, no, it makes total sense how we got here. Listen, Texas Tech is a better team. Texas Tech is Duke has more talent. Duke has more talent than anyone in this field. Duke has more talent than anyone not in this field. Duke is Duke. We know who they are. Duke has not seen a defense like Texas Tech, anything close to it. The Texas Tech defense is going to make Duke think at a level that, like, frankly, like these guys have not had to think at all season. Like they've just been Duke wins games. And this is not an indictment on K because it is what it is. They win games, but like Duke is not winning games because of schemes. They're not winning games because K is out coaching anybody. They're more athletic and more talented. And that's what it is. And that's how that almost caught up to him against Michigan State. Michigan State's not even a good basketball team. And Michigan State was like running with them and hitting threes. And they hung around and they were up five with however much time left. Texas Tech is not going to do that. The driving lanes that existed with Michigan State are not going to be there for Texas Tech. The guards are going to get frustrated. This to me is going to have to be a big Wendell Moore game for Duke because he's kind of the elder statesman on the team, even though he's not really that old. So I think all things being equal, Texas Tech should be like a 3.5-point favorite, I would say. Like Texas Tech to me is very clearly the better team, but you're absolutely right. If I was putting money on this, I would be shitting my pants about the idea of the refs getting the call and K giving them the signal at halftime saying, do it now.
Hey,
do
Jimmy, you missed another one, Jimmy. You missed another one.
I'm telling you, to your point about Duke, I went back and I watched a couple games from 92 and 0-1, and it's like, wow, that offense was crisp, and they're running sets, and they're running out of bounds plays, and now it's like, all right, just figure it out. They're not even running plays anymore.
That's exactly what it is. And Mark Adams, given this man 4 days, that's what it is to me. Is like, again, I'm not like shitting on K. It's just like that's their approach. Duke's approach is like, we're better than you. You have to figure out how to beat us. And Mark Adams giving him 4 or 5 days, whatever it was, to prepare for this game. I mean, Texas Tech is tough, man. And they are going to throw a defense at Duke that is going to punch Duke in the mouth. And I mean, it comes down to not to sound like a hacky announcer and roll out the trope, but like, it really is like going to be a make shots game, and Duke's going to have to hit threes from the outside. Cause I think like the idea of Duke, like driving on these guys and being more athletic, they're going to get stonewalled a lot more often than they think. And it's to me, it's like, is Paolo, is he hitting jump shots? Can he hit a couple threes? Is Trevor Keels, is he going to come to life? And what kind of whistle are we getting? Those are the questions I'm asking going into this game, because all things equal, Texas Tech is a better team.
When is Gonzaga going down?
That's a great question. I like to believe, like, Memphis was a bad matchup for Gonzaga. I actually think Arkansas is a better matchup than Memphis would be, even though Arkansas is a much better team than Memphis, or maybe not much better, but Arkansas is a better basketball team. So I think Texas Tech scares me more than Duke would for Gonzaga in the Elite Eight, assuming they get past Arkansas. But then honestly, nobody in the East scares me for Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga matches up well with everybody in the East, and I like Gonzaga to go to the title game. I would say it's Texas Tech, honestly. I think if they they're going to get by Arkansas. Texas Tech is going to be the toughest matchup for them, just in terms of stylistic play. Like you said, like, Texas Tech is similar to Memphis. They're going to be physical. Gonzaga isn't, I wouldn't say they're a soft team, but I'd say they're like a finesse team for sure. And like to play a more finesse style of basketball. Texas Tech is going to punch them in the mouth if they meet each other. So that is an interesting thing. But if they can get past Texas Tech, I like them in the Final Four, no matter who they're playing. And then honestly, I don't know who on the other side, like Arizona's again, I said they're the best team in the country, but Arizona is Gonzaga. You know, they just took Tommy Lloyd, took the Gonzaga model, brought it to Tucson. I think if I'm Mark Few, I love that matchup. So I don't know. I mean, Gonzaga, it makes sense why they're the favorite, but they do definitely have the toughest region of all the one seeds and of all the, the true contenders. Gonzaga has the toughest road to the title, I'd say, which makes it interesting because that's what you want. You want the best team proving it.
That's Mark Titus. Follow our guy at Club Trillion, at Fox Sports, at Titus and Tate. And one last thing, I thought about you late the other night when I'm watching the end of, well, it's Arizona TCU. I would never admit that on this show. I thought about you, though, because we have a coworker at Fox, Andrew Lynch, who's a diehard Arizona fan. And he hasn't shut up about Arizona for 6 months. And I'm thinking to myself, how do we not have any employee at Fox who has a team in the tournament? How do we not have ISO cam on them the entire time? I would rather watch Lynch watch Arizona lose than watch anything else in this tournament. And you had to do that last year when it was OSU and Oral Roberts.
I did, yeah. And that is – you're absolutely right. It's unfair. It's cruel. Dude, not only that, Tate somehow weaseled his way out of watching Carolina blow a 25-point lead against Baylor. He wasn't even on camera for that. So
I'm convinced Tate has pictures of somebody.
Yeah. I mean, like, what the hell's going on here? It's I don't know. Some people are married to the content game like me, and some people are, you know, not as into it. That was the lowest point of my life, I think, was having to be live on a stream as Ohio State was blown. And this is like, there wasn't a tournament in 2020. So this is the first tournament back, and like, all of America is excited to have NCAA tournament basketball on. And there's so many factors that added into it that, like, it was an absolutely miserable day. And having to watch that live on the air, I was like, this is the low point. But then the worst part about it wasn't even the loss. It was that night getting calls from our bosses at Fox, and they were like, dude, that was awesome. We got so many people watching. Do that again. We need more of that. We need, every time Ohio State's losing, we're putting a camera in your face. And I was like, I hate you all. This job sucks.
Best thing you've ever done. The funeral of your favorite basketball team in the world.
Right. That is the best thing that I've ever done. Yes. That's the happiest my boss has ever been was me at my lowest point. So that tells you how this business works, I guess.
Life's not fair, pal. It's not fair. I appreciate you making time. I know you're busy. We'll be listening to Titus and Tate, and we'll be watching you on Fox. Thanks.
Good stuff.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Mark Titus from Fox Sports, Titus and Tate, for hopping on the show. Record check 233-240. Down 5-8. We got three in the hopper, and I love these three. Texas Tech minus 115, Villanova minus 5, and Villanova to make the Final Four plus 250. Coming up on Chicken Dinner, we get ready for baseball even more. We will talk futures with our buddy Ian McDonald, who's one of the best at finding those players and teams at opportune prices. Cash your tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next week right here on Chicken Dinner.